Greetings, House of Jacob. Welcome to Word Study with Brother Hebert. This is part 4 of Devil, Satan, Serpent. You can follow along with the article by going to www.thinkoutsidethebeast.com. Devil, Satan, Serpent can be found on the main menu and in the Word Study's audios menus. In part 3, we explored how the serpent symbol continues to reveal deep spiritual truths. Dan is likened to a serpent, highlighting subtlety, strategy, and prophetic insight, even reflected in European heraldry and history. We examined how Moses was appointed as a representative god to Pharaoh, wielding divine authority, and how serpents were used as both judgment and healing in the wilderness, prefiguring Christ. We also exposed witchcraft as rebellion, not just pagan rituals, but including twisted teachings that oppose God's law. The scapegoat was shown as a symbolic transfer of blame, ultimately pointing to Jesus, not to a desert demon named Azazel. In the Psalms and Proverbs, we saw the use of serpent to describe deceitful tongues and harmful behavior, reminding us that sin and wickedness often strike subtly, like a serpent's bite. Now let's get into the prophets and the rest of the Old Testament. Isaiah 14:29, "Rejoice not you, whole Palestina, because the rod of him that smote you is broken. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery flying serpent." These are all descriptions of successive conquering nations. Some say that the serpent is Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and by the cockatrice, Sennacherib, and by the flying fiery serpent, Nebuchadnezzar. Others have Nebuchadnezzar and his sons meant by the serpent, and after should come the Medes and the Persians, signified by the cockatrice, and after them the Macedonians, designed by the flying fiery serpent. Isaiah 27:1 uses vivid imagery to convey God's judgment upon formidable adversaries. Isaiah 27:1, "In that day Yahweh with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan the piercing serpent, even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea." Leviathan equals, as we've seen in Job, earthly potentates, kings and empires, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Rome, United Nations. The symbolism of the mythical creature reveals God's promise to punish the great enemy of his people. Isaiah 45:5,
"For I am the Lord God, and there is no other God beside me. I strengthened you, and you have not known me."
Belief in a great satanic being undermines God's absolute sovereignty. Deuteronomy 4:35, "Unto you it was shown, that you might know that Yahweh, He is God, and there is none else beside Him." Deuteronomy 32:39,
"See now that I, even I, am He, and there is no God with me. I kill, I make alive, I wound, and I heal. Neither is there any that can deliver out of my hand."
Verse 6,
"That they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am Yahweh, and there is none else."
Psalm 102:15, "So the nations shall fear the name of Yahweh, and all the kings of the land your glory." Verse 7,
"I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, Yahweh, do all these things."
God alone has ultimate power. Idols, and by extension devils, have none. The term evil here is often understood as calamity or disaster or adversity, indicating that God permits adversity as part of His divine plan. This proclamation challenges dualistic beliefs, such as those in Zoroastrianism, which posits two equal and opposing forces of good and evil. By affirming that He alone creates both light and darkness, peace and calamity, God asserts His sole sovereignty over the universe, leaving no room for the existence of an independent, opposing evil entity. Who blinds the eyes? Exodus 4:11. And the Lord said unto him,
Who has made man's mouth, or who makes the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord?
God himself declares that he is the one who makes people blind or deaf, emphasizing his sovereignty over human perception. Deuteronomy 29:4. Yet the Lord had not given you a heart to perceive, and eyes to see, and ears to hear unto this day. Despite witnessing miracles, Israel could not perceive spiritual truth because God had not granted them the ability to understand. Isaiah 6, 9-10, and he said,
Go and tell this people, Hear you indeed, but understand not, and see you indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert, and be healed.
God commands Isaiah to blind and harden the people of Israel as an act of judgment for being antinomians. Psalm 119:70, Their heart is as fat as grease, but I delight in your law. Isaiah 29:10, For the Lord had poured out upon you the spirit of deep sleep, and has closed your eyes, the prophets and your rulers, the seers, has he covered. Yahweh deliberately blinds even prophets and rulers as a form of judgment. Isaiah 44:18, They have not known nor understood, for he has shut their eyes that they cannot see, and their hearts that they cannot understand. Yahweh actively prevents people from understanding spiritual truths. Ezekiel 12:2,
Son of man, you dwell in the midst of a rebellious house, which have eyes to see and see not, they have ears to hear and hear not, for they are a rebellious house.
Though they have physical sight, their spiritual blindness is a direct act of divine judgment. Matthew 13:13-15, quoting Isaiah 6:9-10, Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. Jesus affirms that God's judgment includes blinding people so that they will not understand the gospel, because they would not receive instruction. Proverbs 9:9, Give instruction to a wise man, and he will yet be wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. John 9:39, And Jesus said, For judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. Jesus explains that his coming results in both spiritual enlightenment and blindness according to God's will. John 12:39-40, quoting Isaiah 6:9-10 again, The reason they could not believe is because God had blinded them. Romans 11:8, quoting Deuteronomy 29:4 and Isaiah 29:10, According as it is written, God had given them the spirit of slumber, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear unto this day. Paul confirms that God himself is the one who blinds people to the truth. 2 Thessalonians 2:11-12, And for this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. God actively sends delusion upon those who reject the truth. God sovereignly controls perception, opening or closing eyes according to his will. Spiritual blindness often serves as divine judgment for persistent sin or rejection of the truth, fulfilling his plan, whether by preserving a remnant, revealing the truth in his timing, or bringing judgment. Jesus affirmed this, stating that his teaching both enlightens and blinds based on a person's heart. Isaiah 65:23-25 presents a prophetic vision of a harmonious and restored creation under divine blessing. Isaiah 65:23, speaking of the children of Israel,
"They shall not labor in vain, nor bring forth for trouble, for they are the seed of the blessed of Yahweh, and their offspring with them. And it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer, and while they are yet speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock, and dust shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, says Yahweh."
The wolf symbolizes the tribe of Benjamin, which all the apostles were Benjaminites except the betrayer Judas Iscariot, who was an Edomite Jew. The lion symbolizes the Lion of Judah, and the bullock symbolizes Ephraim, who is England. The straw which they are going to eat together is clean, uncontaminated peace after the adversaries are defeated. The meat of the serpent represents the carnal, worldly, earthly-minded men. This is a prophecy of reigning with Jesus Christ during the Reformation and the symbolic 1,000 years when Christian society flourished without the Antichrist influence of the Jews and usury between 800 and 1800 AD. Jeremiah 8:17 employs vivid imagery likening the impending Babylonian invaders to venomous serpents and cockatrices, mythical creatures symbolizing deadly threats. This metaphor underscores the inevitability and severity of the judgment facing Judah due to their persistent disobedience. Jeremiah 8:17,
"For behold, I will send serpents, cockatrices, among you, which will not be charmed, and they shall bite you, says Yahweh."
The serpents in Jeremiah's day were the Babylonians. Today, the serpents that bite, lend upon usury, are the Jewish bankers of Mystery Babylon. These serpents symbolize the Chaldean army, whose attacks would be as fatal as the bites of venomous snakes, and against whom no charm or strategy could prevail. The phrase, "which will not be charmed," indicates that these adversaries are beyond persuasion or appeasement. The Babylonians, like uncharmable serpents, are instruments of divine judgment that cannot be diverted or mitigated by human means. In Jeremiah 46:22, the prophet uses the imagery of a serpent's voice to describe Egypt's reaction to the impending Babylonian invasion. Jeremiah 46:22, "The voice of Egypt therefore shall go like a serpent, for they, the Babylonians, shall march with an army and come against her, Egypt, with axes as hewers of wood." The voice of serpents heard afar off, and so it may respect that Egypt's voice, once loud and boastful, will be reduced to a subdued tone. Like as in Isaiah 29:4, where subdued speech symbolizes a state of humiliation and defeat, the dreadful lamentation the Egyptians would make when they should see the Chaldeans come upon them to destroy them, just as serpents in the woods makes a horrible noise when they are set on fire or are cut down. Amos 5:18-27 serves as a profound warning to those who complacently anticipate the day of the Lord, mistakenly believing it will bring them light and security. Instead, the prophet Amos cautions that this day will usher in darkness and judgment due to the people's injustices and hollow religious practices. Amos 5:19, "As if a man did flee from a lion, and a bear met him, or went into the house and leaned his hand on the wall, and a serpent bit him." This verse employs vivid imagery to illustrate the inescapability of divine judgment. These proverbial expressions signify that the Israelites would not be safe in the day of the Lord, but rather fall into greater evils and more distressing calamities. The lion, as Nebuchadnezzar, the bear as the Medes and the Persians. The house represents the temple, which many thought they were safe in, but God had left the temple, and the pagan Greeks defiled it. After that, the Edomite counterfeit priestcraft and their traditions of men, followed by Catholicism, followed by 33,000 denominations of Judeo-Christianity. The wall, which one is going to lean against in our national house, is spiritual salvation through our Master Jesus Christ. It is the same wall that is prophesied in Isaiah 60:18. Violence shall no more be heard in your land, wasting nor destruction within your borders, but you shall call your walls salvation, and your gates praise. One is inviting the sting of the cockatrice if one seeks rest in spiritual salvation as preached by the so-called 33,000 Christian denominations banded together in the Communistic Federal Council of Churches of Antichrist, which is sponsored and maintained by Jews in efforts to keep the true identity, name, and message of Jesus Christ out of the church houses. One is guaranteed to receive snake bite if one leans against the false wall of the so-called Christian spiritualist cults which deny the sovereignty of Jesus Christ.
Oh, I'm saved.
The passage metaphorically conveys that superficial religious observances cannot shield one from the consequences of moral and ethical failures. The Israelites' reliance on ritualistic worship, devoid of genuine righteousness and justice, renders them vulnerable to unforeseen dangers, much like the serpent's unexpected bite. Amos underscores that true devotion requires aligning one's actions with divine principles of justice and righteousness. Without this alignment, anticipated days of deliverance transform into occasions of darkness and calamity. This passage serves as a timeless reminder that genuine faith is demonstrated through ethical conduct and social justice, not merely through ritualistic practices. It challenges individuals and communities to reflect on the authenticity of their devotion and the integrity of their actions. Today's churches should learn from Amos because they look forward to the rapture, which, when that day comes, they will be in for a brood awakening. Judeo-Christianity is a false wall.
Just believe.
Amos 9, 1-10 presents a vivid depiction of inescapable divine judgment upon Israel, emphasizing that no refuge, be it in the heights of Mount Carmel or the depths of the sea, can shield them from God's retribution. Amos 9:1. I saw Yahweh standing on the altar, and he said,
Smite the lintel of the door, that the posts may shake, and cut them in the head, all of them, and I will slay the last of them with the sword. He that flees of them shall not flee away, and he that escapes of them shall not be delivered.
Amos was in Bethel, and this is a reference to the temple housing that idol of the golden calf, which represented the state religion of Israel since the days of Jeroboam. Verse 2.
Though they dig into hell, there shall my hand take them. Though they climb up to heaven, from there will I bring them down. And though they hide themselves in the top of Carmel, I will search and take them out from there. And though they be hid from my sight in the bottom of the sea, from there will I command the serpent, and he shall bite them.
Mount Carmel, known for its dense forests and caves, was considered a natural refuge. However, God declares that even there, his reach is absolute, and he will extract those who attempt to hide. This imagery descending into the ocean's depths symbolizes seeking the most concealed places, yet even in such isolation, God's sovereignty prevails. The serpent here is a metaphorical symbol of impending danger or oppressive forces. This underscores that evasion is futile, divine judgment is unavoidable. All these are metaphorical expressions to show the impossibility of escape. The serpent is a symbol of cruel and oppressive kings or empires. They were not escaping the Babylonian invasion. Verse 4.
And though they go into captivity before their enemies, from there will I command the sword, and it shall slay them. And I will set mine eyes upon them for evil, and not for good.
The guilty will certainly be punished. If they enter the sacred place of worship, even that will not shelter them. Let them climb ever so high, or burrow ever so deep. Let them scale the loftiest hills, or dive into the deepest seas. The consequences of their sins will overtake them. The message of Amos 9:1-10 is timeless, reminding individuals and nations that accountability is inevitable. It calls for introspection and alignment with moral and ethical standards, emphasizing that genuine repentance and righteousness are the paths to reconciliation and restoration. Micah 7:17 employs vivid imagery to depict the profound humiliation and submission of nations before Yahweh. The prophet laments over the lack of godly individuals, using the metaphor of seeking fruit after harvest and finding none. In verses 15 through 17, Micah discusses God's promise to show wonders as in the days of the Exodus, leading nations to humble themselves and fear the Lord. Micah 7:17, they shall lick the dust like a serpent. They shall move out of their holes like worms of the earth. They shall be afraid of Yahweh our God, and shall fear because of you. The nations which shall lick the dust like a serpent are all of Israel's enemies, those nations gathered against Israel which are mentioned in the last day's prophecy of Micah 4:11. They shall lick the dust like a serpent. This phrase symbolizes utter defeat and abasement. It echoes the curse upon the serpent in Genesis 3:14, condemning it to crawl and consume dust, representing a state of degradation. They shall move out of their holes like worms of the earth. This imagery portrays enemies emerging from their hiding places in fear and submission, akin to creatures reluctantly leaving their burrows. They shall be afraid of Yahweh our God, and shall fear because of you. The nations, witnessing God's mighty acts, will stand in awe and dread of his power and his people's restored position. In summary, Micah 7:1-17 portrays a society steeped in moral decay, yet it culminates in a prophetic vision where adversarial nations, humbled and fearful, recognize and submit to Yahweh's supreme authority. The serpent's symbol is consistently used to represent earthly kings, oppressive empires, and divine judgment, not supernatural beings. From Isaiah to Amos, the serpent imagery pointed to real-world powers like Babylon, Egypt, and corrupt religious systems, all under God's control and used as instruments of discipline. The message is clear. Yahweh alone is sovereign. He forms the light and darkness, peace and calamity, and even blinds those who reject his word. There is no rival power beside him. In the end, the enemies of Israel will be brought low, licking the dust like serpents, while the faithful are restored to a kingdom of peace under God's righteous rule.
To quickly recap what we learned about the serpent in the Old Testament.
From Genesis to Micah, the serpent is consistently used as a multifaceted symbol, never as a literal supernatural being, but as a representation of the carnal mind, corrupt reasoning, and earthly opposition to God. In Genesis, the serpent embodies temptation through self-reliance and rebellion, setting the pattern for Cain, Esau, and others who rejected God's ways. In Exodus and Numbers, serpents became instruments of divine judgment and symbols of deliverance, revealing both consequences for sin and God's power to heal. Through the law, psalms, and prophets, the serpent motif grows to represent oppressive kingdoms, deceptive leaders, and judgment upon the rebellious. Whether it's Babylon, Egypt, or false religious systems, the serpent is a metaphor for earthly powers and human pride in conflict with divine truth. Yet each usage reaffirms the same truth. God alone is sovereign, and all who trust in their own wisdom will fall, while those who look to Him will live. Rely on Yahweh God and His Son Jesus Christ and the Word, and you will realize with real eyes real lies.